views and opinions expressed on Geeks Under the Influence are that of the panelists and not of our sponsors, Amazon.com and TeePublic. Parental discretion is advised.
I think that what we've discovered recently, though, is that Keanu Reeves just defies the laws of time and space.
Pretty much.
We've been discussing him being like an immortal Highlander, and where for a long time he was the butt of the jokes, and now he's some sort of internet god. So
yeah,
he just had to wait.
No, he just had to be in this new cyberpunk video game to really like cap that for himself. Yeah,
John Wick plus cyberpunk.
I'm glad he's doing all right that they offered him, you know, a role in Toy Story 4, because, you know, he hasn't, you know, he's been struggling recently. So I'm glad they gave him another opportunity with, you know, another franchise.
But he wasn't making Disney money.
That's true. I'm just saying, Disney, they're like, hey, let's give Keanu a chance. Like, you know.
Well, speaking of Disney, and we're getting into the theme of this episode, movies that aged poorly. Can we mention briefly Song of the South?
Yes, we can.
Go in real hard right out the elbow.
There you go.
Actually,
right out the gate.
That's one that I wrote down a whole bunch of notes about because I was curious exactly where that film fell, because Song of the South came out in 1946. It predates both Mary Poppins and Bedknobs and Broomsticks as the one of the most well-known Disney films that incorporates both real people and animation, so I was curious where it stood in the, like, holy crap, this is a problem, but did it do anything worthwhile? That answer is no, because animation and film and real action combining started with The Lost World in 1925, and Disney's first foray into it was in 1923 with shorts, which were entitled The Alice Comedies, which was like featured a super early version of Felix the Cat. So all in all, Song of the South was just a big fucking problem where they were like, look at this full length problem, guys.
Yeah, look at these lovable slaves.
Right.
Oh.
It's jarring. Like, that movie. And the funny thing is that everybody, people that are young enough that they never even saw more than a clip of Song of the South, everybody knows Zippity Doo-Dah. Everybody fucking knows that song. I performed that in my preschool, like, performance. I had a little straw hat and a cane and did a whole song and dance number with people.
I don't know if you should be telling the rest of this.
That's, yeah.
Oh, no.
It was...
anything on the face or...
it was Ku Klux Elementary.
I was going to say, what school would you go to?
Oh, dear. I mean, they still use all of those characters. All of those animated characters appear in the Splash Mountain rides. That's part of why Zippity Doo-Dah is still a song that is around, because Briar Rabbit and Briar Fox are still predominantly featured in a ride. They're just sort of like, what movie? We didn't make a movie. Look at Splash Mountain. Look at it. Look at how fun it is.
Now, let's get actually into the episode here, because we got plenty to talk about. We got to get into the start here. So thank you so much for listening to our newest episode of Geeks Under the Influence. This is going to be super fun. I love the episodes where it's not really about a series of movies or a genre, where we're talking about kind of the nature of film itself, or the nature of a medium or a media, and an aspect of it that we've come to appreciate or find problematic in this case. We are talking, of course, of films that aged poorly. We're going to be getting into somewhat easier conversation about stuff that, like, technology-wise didn't age that well, but we're also going to be talking about some of the ways, the tropes that were used in the past that just do not fly very well anymore, and ones that we can kind of accept for what they are because it was a different time, and ones that are just, it's too much to really consider, like watching an episode of The Cosby Show now. Oh. It's just too much. It's a little too much for me. I can't.
Yeah.
I just can't.
But that's a whole other thing to discuss is...
Yeah, that's part of it as well.
If they've aged poorly because of an actor. Before we tangent off, though, I want to, like, put one more little nail in Disney's coffin.
Okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and say Peter Pan.
I think you're going to be like, Walt Disney hated the Jews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, let me put the stake into Walt Disney's heart. We all
She's got a rare cartoon of Mickey Mouse being like, we hate the Jews.
Oh, God.
Look,
fuck the Jews.
We don't even have time to get into all the Disney propaganda films. That's a whole other thing. But Peter Pan as a whole, as a film franchise, as a thing, has a whole lot of issues. Like, when we're talking, whether we're talking Mary Martin, Peter Pan, or Disney animated.
Animated with the Native American character portrayals that are, like, straight up, like, doing the hand on mouth, like,
yeah,
hooting and hollering.
Do you remember the name of the song?
What Makes the Red Man Red, which apparently was them kissing a woman, and then they just stayed red after that.
And then there's mother-in-law jokes and a whole bunch of shit.
Terrible.
It's rough.
Yeah.
A smoke with a piece of pipe. They literally said that.
I will give a heads up. We are going to be talking about a lot of roll shit on this episode. Yeah. So buckle up, because this is going to be one hell of a ride on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. All things problematic moments in movie history. Welcome.
About to get raw.
Oh yeah.
hey.
Speaking of.
Oh, yeah.
Lovable scamp, homeless black kids living in a junkyard.
They're so fun.
I mean, we could talk about that. We could talk about the Little Rascals.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not even the later film version. I'm talking like the original, like
the original.
The TV series.
Yeah, a lot of that was rough.
Yeah. It was rough.
Before we get into that, let's get into the panel real quick before we get moving on to this subject matter here. The people helping us along this very delicate tightrope walk of an episode in some aspects. To my right, one of the co-hosts of Beautiful Disasters, a series that definitely tackles the conversation of weird problematic things that happen in film.
That's right. Sometimes we encourage that shit.
Yeah. I was recently on the FDR American Badass episode and talk about a movie that gave no fucks about
zero
racism.
Fucks.
And, but the thing is, they handled it in a way that was laughable at best, the way that it was portrayed. So it kind of got away with it a little bit. Cause
I'd put in that kind of South Park, like...
Yeah, that level of kind of definitely... not politically correct, but they know what they're doing, and it's not. It's more just making fun of how ridiculous the thing is.
Definitely not politically correct.
No.
Jesus.
I'm talking about Fuck You Hunter is here.
What's up, bitches?
This is your wheelhouse right here.
These it is.
Movies you come to know and love.
And sometimes they'll go from shitty to great to shitty again, and sometimes it just goes from there. So.
Yeah, yeah. Next to Fuck You Hunter, having trouble with the microphone, it looks like.
I didn't break it.
You didn't break it. That microphone stand is not too far from gone at this point. So
get some duct tape.
Yep, duct tape fixes everything. And a person that's going to help us fix this episode by bringing some great insight...
Yes. No, you can count on me, Hobbit.
She does take her notes. I realized that was some Beautiful Disaster episode.
No, you do definitely take your notes, which I do appreciate it. We're talking about Murphy Lawless here.
Hello.
You got any stuff coming up here performance-wise in town?
Yeah, I don't know if this episode is going to come out before the show happens, but this Sunday, the 23rd, we will be at Firehouse Theater.
This will come out 2 days after that.
Well, so. We were at Firehouse Theater doing a Pandora's Box burlesque retelling, so hopefully I got to see y'all there.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, it was so good.
Man.
It was super good.
You guys are so nice. I'm
I thought
so glad
you set the place on fire
vision.
With that one thing, but you pulled it off.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah, they were mad, though, because we set off the smoke detectors and the fire department came.
Yeah,
it was rough.
Yeah.
Now we have to make all this shit happen, by the way.
Don't you dare! Look, I told Hobbit I would end him over the Titan A.E. soundtrack and over, like, I will fight all y'all about Ray Harryhausen, and I don't give a fuck, but please, for love of God, don't fuck with that relationship. I don't want to have to talk to people in charge. Don't make me have to be an adult.
Although the irony of the Firehouse Theater burning down. Knock on wood or something, because I don't want I would feel so bad if something actually...
We've got evidence from a podcast prior to the event.
No, it wasn't premeditated, I swear. I'm just clumsy.
What about this picture of somebody chuckling while lighting a match?
That's
in the
a GUI accident.
That's just what I look like. My face is just guilty. But other than that, Burlesque Right Meow has pours and pasties at Strange Ways Brewing on the second Friday of every month, I think, with the exception of maybe 1 or 2 months coming up. But
cool.
Just follow us on Facebook and we'll tell you all about it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Now, to my left is my right-hand man. Man, that helps keep this show grounded a little bit when I get carried away, and our guests do as well.
Hmm.
My partner in crime here, Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver.
What's up, guys?
You do definitely kind of throw the hammer down when need be sometimes, and I do appreciate that about you.
All right, so we talked about that. Like, I had somebody actually confuse me for an alpha one time, and I was like, nah, that's not me, dude. I don't really want to, nor have I ever wanted to have to lead people, because fuck that, but I will fucking regulate people, and that's a beta.
There you go.
If you look at wolf packs, there's a strong alpha, but a strong alpha is only as strong as his beta.
What the fuck we? I'm not an. What do we got here then?
Oh, Lord.
I mean,
a fuck ton of betas.
You have a type A personality. You did set this up and lead people.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, just saying.
Yeah, we do kind of take direction.
I'm not talking about like aggro fucking. You know, manly blah 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 alpha. I'm talking about personality trait, alpha personality trait.
I'm not like, come with me if you want to riff.
Yeah, people.
Look, I'm not saying that would work on me, but
it confuse,
would probably work. It would
people,
definitely
people
work
confuse,
on me.
Man, you know, that with the type of personality. So that's what I'm going with. So I'm definitely more of the beta. Like, I just like to, I will smack a motherfucker, keep him in line.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the kind of machismo thing in older movies as well, and how that's changed in the action series stuff over the years. You know,
yeah, I know. But first, we need to talk about the guy who wants to talk about that, which would be Mike the Hopper Pickett.
That's me.
Yeah, that's him.
Hi.
Who just realized he's an alpha, apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say, the closest we have to alpha in this room. So.
Yay!
I'm the Pied Piper of dick jokes.
And our Sherpa through the land of trivia.
The Sherpa through the land of trivia.
Come with me.
And your host for this show, and also Smack My Pitch Up, and Sunday the 30th of June, Booze Clues is doing our next live show at the Dark Room in the Hofheimer Building downtown in Richmond, Virginia, in Scott's Edition. It's been an absolute blast to do the show there. The room is great. The crowds have been fantastic. It's so much fun. We've got some great articles lined up. It's a investigation into the world's most spirited headlines. We look at some of the weird drunken shit that goes on in the world over the previous month, pick the best headlines, and then we quote-unquote investigate them and kind of figure out how this came about. It's just a riff-tastic joyride of drunken debauchery, and that show is free. Doors are at 7, shows at 8. And it's done around 9:15. So it's a free show. It's a short little deal. So you get home plenty of time to get to work nice and early on Monday morning. So come join us. All that info is at GYPodcast.com, as well as info on all of our other stuff that happens in town.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah.
Can I extra plug that show for you real fast? Because, like, I've both been on that show and been at that show without participating. It's a blast either way, dude.
Hell yeah.
Like, I honestly, like, the bartender is super nice. She's stoked
she's
to be
a sweetheart.
There.
Yeah.
Like, she honestly, she's really excited to hear what people have to say. She generally has good feedback about the beer, and everybody's there to have a good time. There's nothing bad about that show and that hangout.
The last live show we did, the episode for that will have dropped by the time this episode drops.
Rad.
And the last one we did was with Will McCobb. On stage with me, the Gary 68 story was fan fucking tastic.
Yeah,
we had so much fun with that. So yeah, come out, it's a great time. Speaking of a great time, let's get into the business here.
Oh yeah,
I mentioned the machismo aspect of what we've referred to as canon films in our group of friends, but it's more than just canon movies. In the 80s, they were definitely the forerunners of that shirtless, super muscled, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger action star movies, where there was a lot of misogyny, there was a lot of machismo, oiled up, hairless man muscle boobs and
pecs, you mean?
Yeah, that one.
Just pecs, let him continue. I'm enjoying this. He's trying to describe as much of the
covered
male
in oil,
body,
nice, perky,
sweet,
hairless,
sweet chest,
all
hair,
of the staples
tanned.
Of a good gay film.
Look, yeah, basically.
Just
no, I'm like not being shitty. Like,
100%. No, I'm like, you're not wrong.
The first time a Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger Predator. That's all you have to say.
Oh, when they
you son
hands.
Of a bitch. Yeah, come on. Like that defines the 80s right there. Yeah. Just that scene
and a hard style.
Yeah.
Now I would say scenes like that themselves aren't problematic. That's just super muscle machismo action. We have that kind of shit still, and it's fine. It's when you incorporate the usage of women in that circumstance that kind of becomes a weird situation where the women are always helpless except for a couple choice things like the Alien movies, for example, where Ripley is kicking ass and taking
Terminator
Terminator is what with Sarah Connor. But a lot of the other action films, the women are there basically to be saved
to be saved or to eventually fall in love with the male lead.
Yes. That she thinks he's the girl's really smart and that guy's an asshole and she hates him until she doesn't wants to suck his dick, like that's basically
until he grabs her in just the right way.
Yeah,
that's the ending of Cobra, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Or literally there's just enough depth to the character where she is literally just his fuck toy and that's it. That is a thing that happened too. Like, there's not even like a story arc for her. It's just like, oh yep, there's your boobs, he fucks you, and then like she is not important at all the rest of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even movies that are really enjoyable and I still love them to death have that problematic trait of it. Temple of Doom, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The female character in there is useless the entire movie and is just whining and complaining her way into marrying Steven Spielberg. But
look,
she's just complained enough. He's like, fine, I'll marry you. Jesus, just shut up. Yeah. But yeah, she is just there as a foil to like frustrate the hero and have someone to save throughout most of the movie.
The movie might have only been a half hour if she hadn't got involved. I mean, he's having to save her ass half the time. Yeah.
So, yeah. He also has to convince her to save him.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Like, she's like just this nagging, it's a nagging trope, right? Like that all women are going to nag you and they, you know, are going to whine about doing anything outside of their heels. And that's pretty much what her character was there for the entire movie.
Yep. It's like Short Round was there just to counterbalance her.
So they went from misogyny to racism?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Jones.
Time for love, Dr. Jones. No.
I mean, realistically, like, that's the beginning of what's wrong with Temple of Doom. I love Indiana Jones, and I love Temple of Doom, and I think that's part of because I love... Dude, shake your head at me all you want, Hunter. No.
You know what? I'll give you this. Crystal Skull helps Temple of Doom so fucking much.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
Oh, my God.
So much.
But also with the Kali cults and stuff, which that was a conversation in the 80s, the Kali cults. That was it was super overblown, just like the satanic panic. In the 80s.
So it's overblown here, but the cult of Kali and the worshippers of Kali, that's not really a problem that we experience necessarily, but that used to be a huge thing where, like, the bloodless rope killings of the cult of Kali, like, where they killed a ton of people with, like, silk ropes.
Why wasn't that the title? Indiana Jones and...
the you bloodless know. Rope killing
yeah. of the cult of Kali, like fucking in
because Holy it's shit. Not a black metal band.
Indiana Jones with the hat, but in corpse paint.
That look, would I'm also in for that.
Yes,
that would actually be more of the Sumerian metal.
I do remember that, but also like it just makes me think about Dissection, and now I'm sad. Just don't stop killing yourselves to go serve Satan. Stay here and make music.
But yeah, there is a...
Just be on a shirt.
There are aspects of Temple of Doom that I appreciate. For example, the villagers in that movie literally didn't speak English and were being fed the lines and pronounced them phonetically.
Yeah.
And so the nature of the village and stuff was a lot of them just kind of being themselves and not really acting a whole lot. Like, that adds some genuine, you know... notes to it. Now there was a lot that was added to that that became kind of an issue.
Yeah, I was gonna say that all that was all fine and dandy, and then of course came in the white savior.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's what I was about to
just
say.
Saying
yeah,
you know,
it's like we feeble villagers can't do a thing if only there was a strong white man to help us out. Did not Harrison Ford, did somebody call my name?
Literally fell out of the sky.
Thank goodness you happened to fall in the correct place.
Like a shit-talking Jesus falling from the sky.
And that's actually another trope is that it has caused movies to age poorly because it's just, it's tired rhetoric that whole like white man savior aspect in movies.
Oh, you mean it should have been just called White Savior Dances with Wolves?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're picking up what I'm putting down.
These Native Americans don't know how to be Native Americans. I can be a Native American.
Let me show you.
How to be Native American. Me, Kevin Costner. Native American. So Native American, I can't even do a British accent.
No shit.
Or doesn't want to. Doesn't even try.
Yeah.
Everybody else is doing British accents. He's like, yeah, go fuck yourself.
Fuck it.
I think even, I could be wrong, but wasn't Christian Slater?
Christian Slater did do a British accent.
Yeah,
vaguely.
So, but he at least tried. Kevin Costner's like, yeah, go fuck yourself. I'm not doing it. This is, I'm an American Robin Hood. You know, just deal. So.
Now, I don't think that really ages the film, though.
No, it doesn't age that film.
No, but no. It's interesting
noticeable.
That everybody else has the accent except for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, my father, and then this is my home. And it's like, well, why don't you sound like anybody else in the area?
So what other white savior movies do we have? There's a number of them, but Glory Road, all the basketball coach movies.
Oh, yeah, every one of those.
Or Dangerous Minds is another one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, what is it? The Blind Side? Sandra Bullock?
The Blind Side, definitely.
The rich
white
Christian, white Christian women, dude.
So amazing.
I believe in you.
Yeah. Or
I know that you're not a brute.
That's God, a major trope in sports movies is the, you know, the white coach that goes into like an impoverished school and teaches, yeah. you know, about unity and togetherness and makes everybody better people by the end of the day.
This is a slightly lesser known one, but I just rewatched it because it was on Prime. But The Substitute, old ex-Marine white dude who goes in and crushes.
Are we talking about Tom Berenger or Treat Williams?
Tom Berenger.
Okay. Because, I mean, he's only in the first one, and then you get a treat with Treat Williams, all right?
I wouldn't call it a treat. it's pretty damn awful.
I need to cover one of those in my pocket. Yeah, those Substitute sequels are pretty...
pretty rough.
Yeah.
Pretty rough. Yep.
Hold on. I don't know if anybody remembers this. There was a movie with Jim Belushi where he was a substitute teacher, or a principal, in the 80s.
No.
Where he comes in and... pretty much is the Morgan Freeman of Lean On Me before Lean On Me. So.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's Jim Belushi.
No.
Yeah.
Now, another one, it kind of falls under White Savior movie, sort of. It's Dances with Wolves in Space, Avatar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where Jake Sully is more Na'vi than the Na'vi, and he has a better understanding about the oneness with nature.
Yeah, I kind of talked to this tree. I know what's going on. What, you can't do that? I'm sorry. Yeah. I figured out how to fly one of these things in like a minute. I had to learn the rest, like your whole childhood. I figured it out in like 5 minutes.
Oh, by the way, I fucked your girlfriend's hair.
Yeah. It was so sweet.
It was super nice. We plugged our USB hair together. It's pretty nice.
God damn it. I'll take things I thought I would only read about in Marquis de Sade books for 100 Hobbit. Right.
Now, in the same White Savior thing, there's the something that we in Virginia are definitely more aware of recently is blackface.
Oh, yes.
Are we?
Yeah that may have come up once or twice here.
I've heard something happened about that, yeah.
It's a thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Where, like, one politician was... became known that was a thing, and then there were several others that were like, oh yeah, so
that's what he got in trouble for. Can we burn every cop?
Well, yeah, there was that like restaurant owner too that decided it was a good idea to go out on Halloween with blackface.
He wasn't a restaurant owner, he was just an employee there, and they backed him.
Yeah, okay.
And they backed him, and that's what actually was part of the reason why, like, 3 or 4 months later, that restaurant went out of business.
It wasn't even months, it was faster than that.
Was it faster than that?
Oh, yeah, it was faster.
When they had a chance to save themselves. When they backed the employee, that's when it became an issue. Yeah.
Yep.
We've had our rounds with blackface here in Virginia, unfortunately, in the 20-teens. But this is something that's been used in movies since, I mean, we're talking Al Jolson, one of the most well-known for blackface, and that's... Oh, seriously rough.
But
that's so fucking rough.
I wouldn't say necessarily that movies with actual blackface... aged poorly, they just kind of went by the wayside and out of there. Like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, who the hell is watching a movie nowadays that has blackface in it?
So, this is a weird statement to have to make, but I've noticed through, like, some of the films that I've watched recently that the reason that it happens in films, like, some of it, like, take, for instance, The Great Ziegfeld. It is a biopic about Florence Ziegfeld's life. Blackface appears in that movie because he employed someone in the Ziegfeld Follies who used blackface, and it was, and they showed significant portions of what they did in the Follies, and like, it was a really long film, but that's why that was in there. I am not justifying that, just to make that clear. It's jarring, and I warn people before you watch it, but that's why that's
contextually, it's at least a little bit more,
right?
You can understand why it's there.
It's educational purpose.
Yeah.
At that point.
Right. Like, it's something where it's like, okay, that was used. The jazz singer, where, like, I understand that at that time and a place, like, we were even dumber than we are now, theoretically. And people just thought that was fine. But, like, it's never been fine. It just is one of those things where we're like, oh, God, that was so long ago. So when you watch this, this is happening. But it's important because sound and motion picture.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to, is not even, it's not necessarily coming, like, it's important because of the introduction of sound.
Yeah.
And I think that since, like, you're giving example of current film that it's in, but it is a documentary style. It's a biopic. So it's more for educational purposes. It's not okay that it was a thing, but, like, it's not like they're bringing out movies that's the thing they have in the movies. Now, I could see it being jarring, but more so for generations that have never been exposed, or they don't really teach that in history books, right? So, like, for instance, my son saw it, like, I've never seen that before. Why is that white man wearing shoe polish? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we kind of grew up in an era and generation
that's a weird
still
place
understood.
To store it on your face.
But we grew up in a generation that was still knew what it was, you know?
Well,
so I feel like generational, I can see it being more shocking now than for us to see it now. Now we just know what's wrong and it shouldn't fucking be there. It shouldn't be there, you know?
Go ahead.
Okay. So this actually, it may end up tying into what you were going to say. I'm not positive. So this, I think, is also a good time to go from, like, so the Great Ziegfeld came out in 1934. Like, that's when that biopic came out.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
I mean, it's not, I would not expect this to be necessarily in the main lexicon because I'm a dork. But on the other side of that, here's three films. One that I'm not as familiar with that Hobbit mentioned that is extremely problematic.
Oh yes.
So I'm just gonna say the names and then we can touch on them in various respect. The first one that I want to bring up, which is The Forbidden Zone, which is 1980. And then there was Soul Man. Which is, it's later in the 80s,
yeah,
right? Like 1989
late,
or something
ladies,
like that?
Late 80s, I believe.
Yeah. Ladies.
And
ladies,
then the last one being Tropic Thunder.
Yes. And I feel all like of that these has have a good different, span yeah. of the different types of use of blackface, which there's enough that there's a different a spectrum of blackface usage.
There's another 80s gem, and brownface is more.
Oh, yes.
Where, and I've had a rant about this, I think, on a preview episode, but fucking Short Circuit.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's, I can't think of the actor, the villain in Hackers.
Yes.
Yeah.
The play. Where they could not find someone actually Indian to play the role. So they said,
because, you know, there's just nobody from India in the United States that wants to act.
We're just going to paint you brown and do the most terrible Indian accent, you know, and they're off.
So there's one more, and it makes me sad to bring it up, but it is a fact. The Mighty Boosh.
The Mighty Boosh does, yeah.
The Mighty Boosh does. It's one of those things that frustrates me about the show, because there's so much that I love about it, and then that happens, and I'm
There's also another one that I absolutely love, this comedy from the 80s, and it does have Dan Aykroyd doing blackface.
Oh, it does.
This is a tough one for me to talk about.
Trading Places,
I love
but
that.
But that's
movie.
Contextual for what they were doing in the story, though.
No.
They were supposed to do that to get to the briefcase.
I mean, Eddie Murphy is in it and gives the okay. Does that count?
No, it's not. No, that doesn't count. No.
But no, what I'm saying is, I rewatched that. I'm not offended because, like, they made a plan to get to the briefcase and stop so they can crush the owners of the company and embezzle them.
Or we like that movie so much.
I think it might be that. I have zero problem with that.
So you're saying that's passable blackface?
No, it's horrible blackface. Like, he looks like shit.
That's the name of the episode, by the way. No, it's
not.
Super not. It's super not. Not the name of the episode.
No, it looks like ass. But I'm saying is that I rewatched Trading Places like around Christmas. I usually watch it around Christmas because it happens around Christmas. So I'm fine with that movie.
Look, I'm going to go ahead and say to you, like, you are the only person on this panel that can make that call because I'm so white I can glow in the fucking dark, dude.
Yeah.
I can't make
that shouldn't
call.
That shouldn't deter people from, like,
we're not
having an opinion.
No, having an opinion is one thing, but I can't be like, well, I'm fine with this level of blackface because, like, I am not the person that's most affected.
No, but am I thinking it wasn't blackface used to portray a black person throughout an entire film. It was blackface used for one segment for a stupid plan.
So you're saying it was using blackface for good, not evil.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Blackface used for good.
I'm going to use this as a segue to bring up Forbidden Zone, because that's blackface for what in the ever-loving fuck?
See, no reason for it. That's what I'm saying. No reason for it, right?
There's no reason for anything in the Forbidden Zone. Have you seen it?
Yeah, Roger Corman?
No, it's Richard Elfman, Danny Elfman's older brother.
I thought Roger Corman did The Forbidden Zone.
Are you thinking about Forbidden Planet?
No, Roger Corman, no.
There's a lot of forbidden things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That he did that's like... Yeah.
No, this is The Forbidden Zone, came out in 1980. It's directed by Richard Elfman, who's the older brother of Danny Elfman. Danny Elfman appears in it as the devil.
I still need to see
this. This film is actually the divergent point where... at that time, Richard Elfman and Danny Elfman were together in the band The Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo. And this was the divergent of where Richard Elfman started to focus on directing and went away from the band, and Danny Elfman took over, and it just became Oingo Boingo and became more well known for those pop hits. And that's where Danny Elfman first started doing like his composer stuff. And you start getting like, there's one song in the film that's, I would call the title track. It's really hard to discern what's going on in that film.
In that entire movie.
In that entire movie. Because the whole thing is just, it is a wackadoodle mess. And the one, and like there are black characters in it, but there's also a random character in blackface. And he is trying to do what they were doing with the band at that time, which is to emulate the like kind of craziness of like the Max Fleischer cartoons and like all of that. Like it's like a strange stream of consciousness kind of thing with a loose story wrapped around it.
Yeah, but also, if I remember correctly, and it's been some years since mm-hmm. I've seen Forbidden Zone, but don't they also portray all the black characters as gamblers and they shoot at each other and stuff? And
it's, all of it is rough.
Yeah, it's like wow.
But also everybody in that school was like, none of the children are portrayed by children. Everything is portrayed by adults. And they're all fucking like whack jobs.
Like horny and...
horny, sissy, weird whack jobs that are like you, they just start humping each other randomly. And it just... it's a lot. That film is a lot. It's an hour and 15 minutes. And if it was any longer, I would probably still have my brains coming out my nose. But the one thing that like I was researching it and I was honestly expecting that there was going to be way more about like controversy about the blackface using it because it was only 1980 when they made this film. But I think the only thing that seemed is because people were just going, what the fuck is this movie?
Yeah.
And they interviewed Richard Elfman. And I did find this where he was like, yeah, I should have thought that through more. That was absolutely not a right decision. Like, stream of consciousness or not, if I remade it, I would leave that out.
Well, that ruins the whole movie for me. I mean, without that one character.
That one thing. Yeah.
So he had a statement that's my bad.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was, at the time. My bad. Sorry.
It was, but at the very least, he didn't, like, I appreciate that he didn't double down about it.
Yeah, that's
And
true.
That's the one thing, because, like, I've seen, like, where people start trying to justify that choice instead of being like, yeah, I fucked up. I can't fix it because it's already out there.
The president.
But I fucked up.
It's a thing that happened. So, yeah. Hey, here you go. There's a. Yeah. Thousands of copies.
Now, we are getting close to the break. I do want to touch on Soul Man before we get into the break. Because if you are unfamiliar with Soul Man, it is about a relatively well-off white kid. You know, normal run-of-the-mill white kid that ends up deciding that in order... He wants to get into Harvard. In order to get like a scholarship, I think, to Harvard, he has to pretend he's black. And he gets in by saying that he's African-American on the paperwork. And then... he realizes, like, well, I'm going to be noticed that I'm not black when I go. So he spends what I can only assume is, like, 12 hours of putting on makeup.
No, his friend has, God, the fact that I remember this shit.
Oh,
his friend invented a tanning pill that he takes a huge amount of that instead of just doing a slight tan, it turns him to where he looks... I feel like I'm going to hell just describing this.
So that's technically
the fact that I remember that shit.
And the way they try to curb away from it being an awful idea for a movie is that he falls in love with a black girl and he starts to learn about like African Americans in his time
not
portraying
any,
one.
Ray Day Chong or Tommy Chong's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there are times where he's like calling people out for being racist while he's portraying a black character, and so he learns so much more about the
so
terrors and the things that affect
like
African Americans in this country by pretending to be one to steal a fucking scholarship from Murphy is about to fucking die.
Oh, I've got
that sounds pretty. Pretty is damn terrible.
Is this the Rachel Dolezal story? What the fuck is happening here?
Oh, and you know who the main actor is, right? Mm-mm. Fucking Pony Boy.
Yeah,
Thomas Howell.
C. Thomas Howell from Outsiders, yeah.
Really?
Oh,
yep.
God.
Yeah.
Pony Boy.
And Red Dawn.
Yep, Pony Boy got some pills.
Oh, fucking A.
It's, yeah, it's rough.
So, Stay Brown, Pony Boy? Is that
That's also not the name of the episode. This might end up being an untitled episode.
Untitled.
But, So, like I know Hobbit mentioned it's getting close to the break, but there's other aspects of movies that have made him age poorly, too. There's tons of just horrible portrayals of different races. You've got horrible Asian portrayals in movies throughout
Breakfast
time.
At Tiffany's?
Yeah, I mean, you've got horrible, like, black actors being, like, white, like Eddie Murphy, the Wayans brothers. That was fucking terrible.
White chicks? Oh.
Oh, God. Or Vampire in Brooklyn, where Eddie Murphy plays a white dude, and, like, then he plays an Asian dude in Norbit. Like, he's fucking terrible.
Is it weird that I don't mind him playing, like, the old Jewish man in the barbershop in Coming to America, though?
Somehow that works.
Yeah, somehow that works.
Yeah. I'm not mad at that. Yeah.
No, see, that's like, I'm not mad at Dan Aykroyd playing a Jamaican. I'm not mad at Dan Aykroyd playing Jamaican. You're not mad at Eddie Murphy playing a white Jew.
You are still trying to get that trendy place as exception.
It's the same thing, though.
It's not the same, really.
How is it not the same? Just because it's reversed doesn't make it okay.
It is one of my favorite comedies.
I'm just saying. You can't have double standards.
It's the punching down thing, though.
Yeah,
like,
that's
we're not,
true. Yeah. It's like Peter Griffin being like, I was there. You know, just when.
Didn't they make Peter Griffin black at some point in Family Guy?
No, he found out that he had, like, you know, a distant relative that was black or something. And
oh, yeah.
0.00.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, I'm black. This is sweet. And
yeah.
So at one point made a joke about him being related to Ella Fitzgerald, which was rough.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, Breakfast at Tiffany is horrible.
Yeah.
That's real rough.
Mickey Rooney, what the hell were you doing?
Really bad.
So on that Mickey Rooney note, we're going to take a short break, and you can listen to commercials that are not being recorded in blackface.
And for a minute there, I thought you were going to do the impression as you were going to break.
My regular face.
I got a little nervous for a second. Yeah.
That was like we did the Godzilla episode. I was like, we are not doing really bad Japanese, like, voice on this at all.
No,
even
no.
when they do it themselves.
Yeah.
No.
So,
no.
So we're taking a break. We'll be back in just a minute. I hate to interrupt this podcast, but I got some news for you. We're doing another Booze Clues Live in the Dark Room on June 30th. So if you have not already had the chance to come out and check out our live show of Booze Clues, then now is the time. June 30th, doors at 7, show at 8, and it'll be over on 9:15. Booze Clues is an investigation into the most spirited headlines around the world. Join me, Mike the Hobbit, along with a cavalcade of comedians, entertainers, and podcasters as we explore some of the weirdest and most wonderful drunken headlines from around the world. The show is free, and it is 21 and up. See you there June 30th from 7 to 9 at the Dark Room, 2818 B West Broad Street, second floor of the Hofheimer Building. This is Mike the Hobbit, direct from Fallout on a trivia night, telling you to come here every first and third Monday for trivia between 8 and 10, 25-cent wings, drink specials, prizes, and tons of really inappropriate trivia. It's a lot of fun. Do you guys agree? Definitely come out and enjoy trivia every first and third Monday at Fallout. We're back for the second half of Geeks on the Influence, all things films that aged poorly. We've had a lot of conversation about stuff that's kind of obvious on why it doesn't work so well in modern ways that films have moved forward since these films came out. I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted because as I'm trying to do the intro, I'm getting weird faces by the panelists as we're tasting different stuff. There's a lot of different flavor profiles that we're dealing with. With what we're drinking, and we'll get to that in a minute. But first, I want to talk about our sponsors before we progress any further. These are sponsors that have not aged poorly over the years. We've had Amazon.com for close to 4 years at this point. Yeah, it's been a while. Like, they were the first. Maybe a year. I'll get out.
Fuck you, Hunter.
All right, there you go. Thank you.
Maybe a year after we started this show, we started working with Amazon as an affiliate, and. For good reason. I mean, we use Amazon on a regular basis for stuff for the show or for just our personal effects. I mean, it's so easy just to order something you need around the house because you know in the next couple of days you're not going to get a chance to swing by a Rite Aid or something. Or
Last minute birthday presents
for sure.
Yeah.
And even with Amazon now, you can get it within 2 hours, which is also nice when you are hanging out.
Last minute birthday presents.
And also weekend cookouts when you're hanging out with friends and you're starting to run low on beer and nobody wants to make that run, you just think ahead and you get them to deliver it to you at the cookout.
Or
cons conventions as well, also very handy. So definitely check out Amazon now for those kind of purchases, for your everyday purchases Like, if you need your own copy of Soul Man, don't do that. But if you do...
Sorry. I'm going to stop reading this.
Captain Marvel did just come out on Blu-ray. So if you've not picked that up yet, or if you want to pre-order Endgame for when that comes out...
Us just came out
as well. Yeah. Yes. So you can get that on Amazon.com. Just make sure you use the link at GUIpodcast.com in the upper right hand corner of the homepage. That way we get credit for your purchases on Amazon. So we get a little bit of money coming into our account so we can afford the storage fees and the replacing equipment, upgrading equipment, the booze that we're drinking on these episodes. We deeply appreciate it. It helps out. Every little bit does. So definitely shop Amazon.com through the link at GUIpodcast.com.
Yep, yep. I mean, it's that simple for us.
Yeah.
Like, and you. I mean, literally.
It really is that easy.
Go through the link and bam.
Yep.
I bought Chuck Tingle's Tingle books through that link for you guys. I hope it helped.
I appreciate it. Chuck Tingle is amazing. And I'm looking forward to any Chuck Tingle story I get to hear at Bibliophilia in the future because that is a blast. We just had Ben on. That runs Bibliophilia on Smack My Pitch Up, and we did A Clockwork Orange, which also is a film that is delicate to reboot.
I still enjoy the shit out of it.
Oh, it's a great
film. Which podcast was that?
That was Smack My Pitch Up.
Yeah. Is there any merch, if I really enjoy that podcast, that I could purchase?
You know, it's funny you mention that.
Yeah.
Not only does Smack My Pitch Up have merch, well done, but also we have merch for every show on the Geeks Under the Influence Network and also exclusive designs made by panelists on the network.
Every show?
Every show.
What?
What about inside jokes from the show?
Inside jokes, we got you covered. There is a shirt with duct tape over my face and it says, "Shut the fuck up, Hobbit."
What if we don't like t-shirts? What if we want like a bag or a sticker? I mean, is that even available?
Look, we have opportunities for merchandise for every flavor.
What?
Yes, we've got cell phone covers. We've got... Okay, that's the only one you get.
Pillows.
There's pillows. Actually, we just had a fan of Geek Father just purchased a throw pillow. It's a good size pillow too. I thought it was going to be a smaller pillow. It's a good size pillow with Scotty's face plastered
face
on
to face and every night with Scotty P.
Coming soon. Ball gags. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, geeks on the influence. Ball gags coming.
Elaborate.
Soon.
Well, it's going to be Shut the Fuck Up, Hobbit, but then it's just going to be a ball gag.
That would be
an exclusive run of Shut the Fuck Up, Hobbit shirts with me and a ball gag. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be my Fallout trivia t-shirt that I make.
I thought you were going to make a ball gag that just said, "Shut the fuck up, Hobbit," on the straps.
Yeah,
that's what I was in
now. Yeah.
Now, to get this merch, it must be pretty complicated.
It is really complicated. You have to go to gypodcast.com/store and click on the TeePublic link, and that's it.
That's it?
You search through the now 19 exclusive designs we have available. We just today put up a Booze Clues shirt that says, "Let's get sleuth faced." It's so stupid. I love it.
Yes. No, it's your dad joke. Oh, actually, on TV.
It's absolutely a shirt. Yeah. It's as advertised.
Shirt.
Immortalized forever.
Forever.
That's
and
right.
It's a good looking shirt. It's got a magnifying glass with the Booze Clues logo. It says, "Let's get sleuth faced" on it. It's a fun shirt. You can get a shirt, sticker, cell phone cover, reusable bag,
hoodies,
baby onesies. You can get all sorts of stuff with this.
Wall art.
That's what you want for your baby is a shirt that says, "Let's get sleuth-faced" on it.
But we do have an Excelsior one with Stan Lee's face, which is always an icon for a onesie. I actually purchased one for a baby.
The baby started early.
Yep.
That's the way to do it. Yeah,
nerd baby.
Papa Lee, man. Papa Lee.
And I know right now as we speak, there's a sale going on the site. And just about every week, there's a new sale, which makes everything 30-35% off usually. So check that out through the link at gypodcast.com/store. And click on the TeePublic link to get to our page.
Shirts are only $13 right now, folks, for the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. From
this
episode.
They're not going to hear this until after the deal's over.
But, I mean, they do regular sales all
every week. Like, pretty much every week there's a sale.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So, those are our sponsors. Check those out. I will also remind Booze Clues on the 30th of June. You may have heard the plug for that a minute ago. And also, Fallout Trivia every first and third Monday. We've got a great turnout now. The more people, the merrier. We've got new people coming almost every single time and checking it out. And I always get compliments at the end of the night. This was so much fun. We did terrible or we did great, you know, but we loved it. We're going to come back. So it's so goofy. I was gifted. I have to comment on it. It's become a running joke both on this show and also at Trivia that I hate the sexualized term daddy.
Daddy Hobbit.
Yeah. And I think that started around the Jurassic Park episode that Murphy was
on. That is 100% my fault because we discovered that you hated being called Daddy. And I even told you flat out that I was going to trick people into calling you Daddy Hobbit. And the following time you had trivia, the teams were Daddy Hobbit, Daddy Mike, and Daddy Bickett.
Yeah, that happened.
Goddamn, I wish I was there.
So the last trivia happened right after Father's Day. So in honor of that, I got a Father's Day card that said, Happy Father's Day, Daddy. It's a very suggestive dripping coming off the word daddy, and lots of pictures of spiders and clowns and dicks all over the card. And signed by most of the people at trivia. Yeah. It was both really touching. It was genuinely a sweet thing. And also fucking horrifying.
Oh, the dick that had the legs.
The spider
like the,
dick?
Yeah, the spider dick.
Yeah, that was...
pretty amazing.
Yeah. Full back of the card. I didn't put that on Instagram because I figured that would get reported. Because that was a lot.
It's a deleted scene from the thing that you didn't see.
Yeah, and also, just to make it worse, underneath it says cummies. So,
God damn. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Although I think if you star out, like you put like a little like happy face over the dick hole, you'll probably be fine. Plus, you're a white guy, so you'll probably be okay.
It's probably fine.
Is it the dick hole that gives it away?
It's
like,
the dick hole, yeah.
That's what I'm led to believe.
Yeah, the nipple of the dick.
According to Japanese porn, that's what gets starred out.
Your urethra is showing.
I'm sorry, let me tuck that away.
That's the nipple of the dick.
Oh, damn it.
The hole.
I'm just waiting for some random person in a crowd to yell, that's the nipple of a dick.
Oh, it's happening now. Yeah. Can we make that a shirt?
Yes. Our next trivia team name. The next time Hunter and I bother you with bullshit at trivia, it's going to be the nipple of the dick.
Yeah. I think we have a team name.
Yeah. So part of the reason we get so off the rails on the show and why we are begging for your money is to afford the booze that allows this show to happen. We're talking about what we're drinking. Hey, we're fucking drinking. We're getting drunk. You want to know? Well, here you go. Hey. So we've got a lot to go through here, so we got to make it quick.
Yeah, we'll do it quick. We'll do it quick.
So first off, we're going to go with Hunter. Tell us why we're drinking this.
All right, well,
beverage.
My sister's
pronounced,
boyfriend.
Sortilege. It is a Canadian whiskey and maple syrup.
Yes, it's very, very, very Canadian.
It's so Canadian.
Yeah.
Totsky, if you're listening, I'm thinking of you with every sip.
Because
you're so sweet.
Can you give us a sorry because it tastes like ass?
It's from Quebec, and I believe it's really, really sweet. You can definitely taste the...
it's good fishing in Quebec.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Love fishing in Quebec.
But it's... I don't know what's the alcohol on there because I just taste sugar.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's 30%. Oh. It's actually a liqueur.
There you go.
I feel like I'm drinking a maple syrup wine cooler.
I want to pour this on pancakes. This is like good drunk brunch.
No, don't waste pancakes.
Your pancakes will get you drunk.
Yeah. Can you imagine drunk on pancakes, though? That's pretty awesome.
Drunk on pancakes.
I'm sorry. I just want another helping. Come on.
Drunk on pancakes sounds like they might be Giants Kids album.
That's true.
But yeah, it's our Aquabats cover band.
Yeah, right. Yes. Well done. Yeah.
Yeah, my sister's boyfriend sent us a care package, which was a ton of Hello Kitty stuff for Charlotte and then a bottle of maple syrup.
Sortilege.
Canadian whiskey. Yeah, and the name of it is?
Sortilege.
We cheated and had to look that up.
Yeah,
we totally did. And apparently it means either sorcery or witchcraft.
I think this is sorcery.
Evil
sorcery.
Sorcery. I've never gotten drunk on
like
maple syrup before.
We've all made faces drinking it where it's just
terrible.
Yeah, it just punches you in the face.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
We all turn into lizard people.
Yeah.
Now, Murphy, you were nice enough to bring us a little tasty beverage here. What are we sipping on?
It's tasty. Yeah.
So this is the Hardywood Sun Crush. And they've got a couple different ones. This one that I brought today is the Southern Peach. It's labeled as a refreshing sparkling ale. They also do the tangerine, the cranberry, and I think that they've got a couple others that they cycle out. This one is kind of nice. It's mostly like just kind of a crisp ale with a little bit of peach on the back finish.
And according to this, it is a sparkling ale made with crushed fruit green tea. And natural flavor.
I can see that, definitely.
Ooh,
very light. And I do like that the peach flavor here is not overplayed.
Nope.
It's very subtle. It's kind of reminiscent of the same kind of flavor profile, but with peach as like a Hell or High Watermelon.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's
yeah.
not sweet. Oh, it's just kind of that back, mm-hmm. back, you know, it's still a support in the flavor profile, yeah. but it's not overpowering
it. I haven't had that yet this year. I suspect I need to pick up
Hell or High Watermelon. I had some recently, and it's a good batch.
Goddamn tasty. Yeah.
Thanks for the First Amendment.
But East Coast local. We always keep East Coast local.
Yep, little Hardywood. Fresh. Hardywood, Ooh. Just down the road.
Ooh. And also, the other East Coast local we got tonight is the Final Share by Adroit Theory. Adroit Theory? I never know how to fucking pronounce it. They are from Vint Hill, Virginia. And this is called the EBK, and it's a hazy Imperial IPA. It's something. I think the winner is the Sun Crush Southern Peach. It's just fucking delicious.
Woo.
The goddamn Sortilege is a travesty.
No, I think there's a time and a place for that.
I will never fucking drink that again.
That's an aperitif right there. That's
I will never put that in my mouth.
No, that's the thing that you trick your friends.
Dates. Yeah.
Use that to trick your friends into doing the syrup chugging scene from Super Troopers.
Fair enough. So it's got a use just to torture people.
That's my use, so yeah.
No, I mean, that's like the sole purpose for that. That is dog shit. Sorry.
It's just super sweet, and I think that honestly, like, that particular liqueur, I think, would be better as something that you would cook with. Like, we joked about putting on pancakes, but honestly, like, if we made a barbecue sauce out of that and maybe cooked that down a little, that would be banging. Oh,
liqueur.
Liqueurs are often used to mix with other stuff, so I could see this being used in a lot of different stuff. I mean, imagine putting that in, like, I don't know, like cocoa or something that. Or I mean, there's a lot of opportunities where this would be a really good choice.
The intention might have been
it
for us
straight, with no ice cubes in it, just like room temperature maple syrup whiskey. Maybe not the best way to.
I want
to
be as Canadian as possible.
So this is
right, let's just go lick trees.
This is pretty tasty. The cool thing about it, Adroit Theory, is they do give you a food pairing, a cheese pairing, and a cigar pairing. And I actually have in my humidor the cigar that they recommend that you pair it with.
You fancy Look motherfucker. You.
I was like, holy shit, I have. I almost smoked it yesterday, but I picked something else.
Also, I'm a big fan of this brewery in general. I got the chance to go up there, and it's a metal brewery. Like, they play metal. Yes. They have a manifesto on the wall about what they stand for. All the beers are like metal as fuck names. Yeah. Like, all I see is Carry On and stuff like that. I mean, it's all like metal as fuck labels, and all the people there have like big plugs and tattoos, and it's a cool fucking place. And it's in this nothing little like cul-de-sac warehouse that looks like nothing, and then the entrance is in the back, and it looks like somebody stores their boat in it. You know, it doesn't look like anything. And then you go around the back and you walk in, and there's just fucking metal blasting and like tattooed people wandering around drinking really good beer. They're barley wine. They have a barley wine that's really fucking good.
It is good.
One, I'm heartbroken that you've never fucking told me that before, because my tagline for Burlesque is the heavy metal princess. And I feel like you both failed me.
Well, sounds like we got a road trip on our
hands. That's what I was going to say, is road trip. And I hope everyone can hear my heart singing to you with excitement at Metal Brewery, because that's everything I fucking love.
There's also a bourbon distillery like a mile from this joint. So, yeah.
Yeah, what is that?
We're going to need a driver. Catoctin?
No.
Yeah, it might be
Catoctin. Is it Catoctin?
It might be Catoctin, yeah. It's been a couple years since I've been up there.
It's 2.5 hours away.
It's not too bad. Good, nice drive, though. Yeah. You can hit some side roads and see some tiny little towns on the way.
That's not always a good thing.
Nice little Sunday drive.
It's not always a good thing.
Yeah.
Little town thing, not always a good thing.
Okay.
I've seen nothing but trouble. I know how this will turn out.
Yeah, but see, with my haircut in my car, I have just enough time where they look at me and they're like, gay or skinhead? And I use that time to escape North Carolina before they see all the super rainbow bumper stickers on my car. They're like, peace, super gay. Bye.
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 Your first instinct was correct. Fuck all of you.
All right. So now we get into this. I got to say, this is probably one of the tougher making a drunken scenes that we've had to come up with. So this is a making a drunken scene.
Making a drunken scene.
Sortilege.
So the problem with this is that we're talking about movies that are... The reason we're talking about them is they're problematic. So dialogue from these is difficult. So we found the best we could do under the circumstances, which are two short scenes. The first one, which we haven't talked a lot about, is from a James Bond movie. This is From Russia with Love, and this is Lowdown. It's you and me, right, doing this?
Yeah, we're doing this. I'm Tatiana.
Okay, you're Tatiana. Oh,
I might change the wordage a little bit, but you know.
Okay,
you can follow.
So this is a short scene Lowdown and I are doing from Russia with Love.
Hey, I think my pie hole's too big.
I think it's a very lovely mouth. It's just the right size. For me, anyway.
I was hoping you'd follow suit with pie hole.
So pie hole,
like,
no.
Line up.
It's like I was watching the movie again.
Yeah, it's just it's basically the same thing. Yeah, so it's
totally.
Bond is, especially earlier James Bond movies, are earlier James really Bond. Misogynistic, like real bad. Where he just randomly grabs women and just shoves his tongue down their throats and just starts being like, well, we're going to have sex now. And they're like, I guess we're having sex now.
Yeah.
I will say
you want a game of poker, so I guess.
As far as for progressing, we're still keeping some of the machismo with the James Bond character, the 007 character. They have progressed to where now the women are actually handling shit on their own right in an offside of the story. Like, they're not, you know, like, as it's progressed, I think it really came into play with the Pierce Brosnan era. And then
Halle Berry.
Hell, exactly.
Yeah.
And now with Daniel Craig, all those women are badass in those movies.
Yep. Like,
they are fucking killing it.
Oh, which makes for a more fun movie anyway.
Exactly.
Especially Tomorrow Never Dies, when you had, goddamn, I feel really bad, but she was big in the martial arts world. And they brought her in, and she was just pretty much kicking more ass than fucking James Bond.
Tomorrow Never
Dies.
Who was that? Fuck.
I know, I'm drawing a blank, but she's fucking beating down some motherfuckers in that movie. So,
but yeah,
and it has Jonathan Pryce.
That has been a series that has evolved with. I mean, a little bit behind the times. It waited until the '90s, but it did. It did finally evolve, right? I mean,
it was a nice little note that they made where the Daniel Craig Bond, I think, came out of the water in yellow, like.
Michelle Yeoh.
Bikini briefs?
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Yeoh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bikini briefs that mimicked the bikini that one of the Bond girls came out of the water in a previous Bond film. And so it's kind of like a little homage to, but it was Daniel Craig walking out like fucking...
Sashaying.
Like, making that butt snap as he's like walking out of the water.
I mean, he do got a booty. He got that squat booty. I'm just saying.
A View to Kill is...
Make that shit pop.
A View to Kill is really hard to watch because Roger Moore as Bond is like in his fucking like mid-50s. And, like, he's old enough to be the dad of most
down
of the chicks.
These 22-year-olds.
Yeah, and it's just like, this is fucking creepy as shit.
It's like he should be in, like, in a white van.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Kinda, yeah.
Actually, I think what you mean is he should be in a Richmond hardcore band.
Oh, burn.
Yeah. Fuck.
Oh,
prove me wrong.
You just got burned.
I mean, slinging fucking rocks.
That's a GY burn.
GY burn, yes.
God damn.
I felt that. That was harsh.
Tell me I'm wrong. I'll apologize.
I didn't say you're wrong. It's just like,
metal.
Ooh,
she's pretty fucking metal.
Hey. Not all Richmond hardcore bands.
No, I would say Murphy's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Not metal, pretty hardcore. That's hardcore, I'm just saying.
Murphy, Richmond Hardcore Lives Matter.
Hobbit, aww. I know that I said that I would cut you over the Titan AE soundtrack and over Ray Harryhausen, but that is nothing to the pain I will inflict on you if you ever do that again.
Okay, fair enough.
Right, now, before we get back into...
the drunken
scene. Yeah.
I will say that this is reminiscent of the old days.
I don't want to have to get out of wet vac to clean the couch after I do that. I will smack him.
All right. So on that.
Smack. Get it? Yeah.
The next one we're doing is from.
Prove me wrong.
A film we had mentioned. I'm trying so hard right now.
I'm sorry.
The film I had mentioned earlier that is deeply an issue. We're doing a scene from Soul Man.
Oh, man.
Now, I dug through a lot of quotes to get this one, and this is the least problematic
This seems the safest.
This is the safest one I can find because it makes mention of what's going on a little bit, but also in the same note, it aggrandizes this dude that, like, went in blackface because he learned a very valuable lesson that, like, a lot of other people just don't really get. Like, he understands the plight of the black man now.
Put on shoe polish.
God, I took a sip when you said that. It almost went straight to my brain.
He walked a mile in their blackface, and he learned some valuable lessons.
Can we please use that as a title?
No.
That's fucking funny.
This might be untitled.
Yes, seriously.
Walk a mile in your blackface.
I think you killed Lowdown.
I'm sorry. It's fucking funny.
So who's Professor Banks on this one?
I am.
Okay. And Mark, the
sensitive one, yes.
The sensitive one that has learned so many lessons.
Yeah.
Yes, so whenever you're ready.
You've learned something I can't teach them. You've learned what it feels like to be black.
No, sir.
I beg your pardon?
I don't really know what it feels like, sir. If I didn't like it, I could always get out. It's not the same, sir.
You've learned a great deal more than I thought.
I'm just really thinking that you're doing Sling Blade. That's the only way
you're making that okay.
Close, it was so like, border. Could I make the scene a little more offensive?
No, if you did Sling Blade, I'm sorry, Hobbit, but if it was Sling Blade, it would have been a
I kind of debated about doing Forrest Gump, but I was between the two.
I thought you
so.
Were going weird Marine Corps response.
I was going to, but I didn't want to scream and fuck up the levels on the
yeah,
shit.
Thank you. So. Hunter the Grunt. Yes. Right? Yeah. True grunt marine. Yeah.
You know how it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The true.
All right. So, back on to the subject at hand here.
Walking a mile on someone's blackface.
Now, yeah, that one.
So want that.
Dude, it's so fucking funny. I'm sorry.
Now, we did have a direction we were thinking of going after the second half.
Well, we started talking about Breakfast at Tiffany's and some of the just horrible other.
The portrayal of different races just, other than your own. I know that Rob Schneider has definitely played.
Oh.
He played the Samoan dude in 51st Dates.
Mm-hmm. He played the like retarded Cajun in like Waterboy.
Yeah, he played a Chinese character in something.
Big Daddy. He owned the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and in I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry too.
Which really? Talk about a fucking problematic movie. I Pronounce You Chuck and Larry is cringeworthy bad. Now, like it was not long after it came out. It was like this is just an excuse to make gay jokes. Like that's
yeah.
The only
I don't think they won a GLAAD award.
They're like,
with that.
Hey,
no,
gays are pretty cool, right? By the way, gay joke.
Hey,
gays are cool.
We want to take advantage of the system and get all the medical benefits. Let's get married. Gay joke. Oh, I really want to touch Jessica Biel's boobs. Gay joke. Like it's fucking terrible.
It's rough.
It's the soul man of gay films.
It's the Three's Company of that
pretending to be in order to get benefits because of
good call.
Yeah, Three's Company.
Mr. Roper and the Don Knotts character with the gay jokes with John Ritter. Yep. Oh my God. Yep. Yeah, that's terrible. Talk about shows that age poorly.
There
fucking
you go.
Three's Company.
Yep.
Also, that's something we haven't really discussed too, are the gay characters in movies. I know in, what movie was there? The Rock played a gay character in, was it Get Shorty or was it the sequel?
It was the sequel.
Be Cool.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
In some Adam Sandler movie, Dave Matthews played a gay shop owner. That was doing all the stereotypical stuff.
I'm gay.
Yeah.
He just started singing Crash into me.
Crash, yeah. I'm gay. Like, that's like, not.
Yeah, no, that's not. It yeah.
Well, so was it like, crash into my ass, baby.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I don't know.
Y'all know way more Dave Matthews than I'm comfortable with.
I know. I was listening to
too
you
much
know your enemy.
Public Enemies.
And yeah.
There was the Culture Club clone in The Wedding Singer.
Oh, God, yeah.
A lot of Adam Sandler movies, actually.
Yeah.
Weird.
So do Jewish people hate gay people? Is that where we're going with here? Jewish people don't mind making fun of gay people?
No.
I'm just putting a thread together. There's a common thread. Adam Sandler's Jewish. And a lot of gay stuff in his movies. Gay jokes. Gay bashing.
I just think that Adam Sandler may have some out of touch comedy styles.
Yeah.
Think about the SNL crew at that time where he came from. I feel like Wayne's World had a lot of gay jokes. So that was Mike Myers and Dana Carvey. Like that whole SNL crew, aside from Chris Farley and David Spade, they didn't have a lot of gay bashing. Punching down jokes.
Not really. No.
But like,
that was actually just Chris Farley's style of humor was very charming, adorable, very, very friendly, kind of funny. It was never really at the expense of somebody else.
It was expensive of himself.
Yeah.
Right.
Always. Absolutely. Expensive of himself.
He was primary self-depreciating comic.
And David Spade was at the expense of Chris Farley.
Well.
That's comedy was.
Either that or he's a total sycophant. Those are his like.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, like his character in PCU.
Oh. I was actually thinking Coneheads.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh. Oh, Coneheads. I need to watch that again soon.
It's got a couple good parts.
You brought up PCU. I haven't watched that in years.
PCU is great. Because it does talk about the balance between like actually caring about a cause and taking it so far that you just get super hypersensitive to everything. And there is that's something to be talked about on this episode as well, whereas there's stuff that's definitely not okay. There's also stuff that it's of the time and you just kind of understand that to be the case.
Yeah, but how do you explain, speaking of PCU, you made me think of Jeremy Piven's, how do we explain his character of Ari in fucking Entourage, where he is just gay bashing the hell out of his assistant, gay and Asian bashing the entire series. And that was in the mid 2000s. How do you explain that? Think about it, right? I mean, he was hate.
It's kind of going into when you have movies where there's mobsters and they're dropping like N-bombs and all sorts of other stuff because the portrayal of the character is this fucking terrible human being that doesn't.
Fair enough. He is a terrible person.
Yeah.
And now I'm referencing watching that show, which I hate you, but I mean, that same person he was bashing through half the series, he has to come back to beg to help him out.
No, I mean, there was a relationship there, but like also he was like, he would take out his any irritation he had by like hate and shaming the gay Asian dude that was his, like, essentially ended up being his like best friend.
Yeah.
some unresolved issues there. Like,
that sounds kind of like a Sinatra Sammy Davis situation there, where it's like
Sinatra with everybody.
With
Have
everyone.
You fucking scenes.
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra
yeah.
participating in any film ever.
But that was kind of the dynamic with Sammy Davis, especially with most of the Rat Pack, where they were allowed to make all these really unreasonable jokes because, well, he's our friend, though.
We're drinking.
And it's like, yeah, especially the roasts and stuff they did. Yeah, it got real, real dark. And Sammy just kind of had to take it because he was, you know, to stay part of the posse. You know, and it's just
he was black and Jewish. I mean,
yeah.
Well, that's what we're talking about as far as like discussing like punching down, where, you know, it puts that person that's, you know, not to say othered in some way, but like by that group, like if it's a group of all white people and you're the only minority there, or all, you know, straight or all cis people there and you're the only minority, and you're like, oh, fuck, I really don't want to lose the only people that I feel like I connect with, so I guess I have to be okay with this.
Mm-mm.
And it's a shitty situation to put people
in. Yeah.
But there was a lot of movies we just talked about that came out more so in the 90s that was the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
80s to 90s.
80s to
and 90s. I would say
early, like 2000, before 2005, yeah. pre-2005.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Oh, speaking of 90s movie, one thing that I thought about was that was super problematic that we have to mention before we get on with is American Pie.
Yeah.
Where they're filming the chick without her knowledge as they're trying to get their friend to have sex with her on camera and then post it for other people to see. That's super not okay.
Yeah.
You just made me think of 90s and American. What about American Beauty? That movie is not rewatchable, dude. Not because of the actor, but because he is literally lusting after a fucking teenager the entire goddamn movie.
And the actor doesn't help now.
Now the actor doesn't help. But seriously, like, come on, man.
That whole movie is rough. And that movie does call attention to the fact that it's rough, where he, like, realizes what the fuck he's doing. And he's like, holy shit, I'm fucked up.
Yeah.
Which would be cool if Kevin Spacey had ever done that. but that actually is a good segue to the other stuff that we were going to talk about, where we're like, honestly, John Hughes, sorry, I'm about to come for you hardcore.
Every one of his movies,
yeah. So many of them, like, let's talk about 16 Candles, and apart from John Hughes, let's talk about Revenge of the Fucking Nerds. Like, I really wanted to root for the nerds, but as soon as I got old enough to recognize what was happening, where I still remember, like, the year that I recognized that there was a rape scene in that movie.
Mm.
Like, where she, like, he lies to her about who he is so he can go down on her. But then she's fine with it because he was good at it. What in the ever-loving fuck is that? Like,
that's some straight-up, like, misogynist. That's rape culture behavior. Is like, well, no, once she gets a taste, she's going to be into it. You know, that's
right.
Fucking awful.
Yeah.
That is fucking terrible.
But these are movies that followed Porky's. I mean, that whole 80s trend of Porky's kind of started of check out the chick, what's going to happen? Like, and just pretty much women were objects. And
Porky's spawned sequels. There were sequels to Porky's.
There were sequels to Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah, but they weren't.
There's sequels
to
a lot of shit.
Yeah, but Porky's kind of followed suit. Revenge of the Nerds didn't really follow suit from the first.
But I mean, Porky's, like, there's whole basis of, like, check out these, like, it's degrading.
The cover
women.
Is a dude looking through a peephole in a shower.
Yeah.
Though Revenge of the Nerds did have throughout the recurring gay black character that they were able to use for both black jokes and gay jokes on a regular basis throughout.
And Tammy the T-Rex.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry, yeah. I just want to make Murphy crawl, like get a little nervous.
Another movie, make mention
Look,
of
that
Revenge.
Movie wouldn't have been shit without that character.
Revenge of the Nerds reminded me of the Wayans Brothers film Little Man, which was fucking abysmal anyway.
Jesus
but there
Christ.
Was a scene where, was it Marlon?
Marlon Wayans was the little man. Yep.
That he was like pretending to be a baby to like live with his family, and he was staying in the bed with them, and like. Had sex with the wife that she somehow thought was the husband at the time, which I'm not sure how that works. But like then at, later, it's like, yeah, that like the other night where you like you fucked me real good. And he's like, what? I didn't do that. And then little man's like, like, yep, I fucked your wife with this. Like, and that's the end of the movie. That's how they end the movie where it's just like, oh, you fucking my wife.
I'm raising my hand because I would like an adult, please.
Yes.
I am uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's when it came out, I was working at a video store at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Blockbuster. I don't know why I didn't like name it by name. I hope I don't get in trouble.
What's they're coming back. We listen to your podcast. Yeah. You're in trouble.
And it was coming out that week. So I, got it before it came out and watched it. And it was a dog shit movie. And then it ended that way. And I went, that's rape. Like, that's, you're ending on it, like, him being like, ha, 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 raped your wife. You know, that's how they did it. You know, that's how they ended the fucking movie.
Yeah, that's super.
Yeah, that's fun. Not,
I
was going to pull out a group, two directors, late 90s, that kind of now, they probably won't get away with it. The Farley Brothers.
Yeah.
Farley Brothers.
With a lot of their stuff.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
You know, like Shallow Hal, things like that.
Shallow Hal is cringe, full fucking cringe.
God. That's just one of those where they're like, I just don't think that their stuff
wouldn't.
Yeah.
Actually, that circles me back to the John Hughes thing where it's like, it's okay to learn to love someone for who they are as long as you don't have to see them for who they really are. Like, let's talk about Breakfast Club.
Thank
where,
you.
Like,
okay.
You know, the nerd ends up alone, and the weird chick, like, oh, she's so beautiful as long as she's not herself.
Yeah.
Give her the makeover.
Whoa.
And then, okay, she's fine.
Yeah. She was pretty.
Oh, my God. I can see the real you now.
And if you want to hear our thoughts on a reboot of that, you can listen to an episode of Smack My Pitch Up.
Well done. Well done. Good throw. I like
that's
that.
That's a good episode, too.
Yeah.
That was a good... Hobbit and I were on point with that. We were like eye and eye on that.
I've actually gotten a couple people make mention of that episode specifically saying that we really dug in deep on that episode. So
reach out to Hollywood.
That's that. Yeah. See, like, and that's the thing. Like, I'm not going into that. This is a different episode. Anyway.
Well, that brings me back to the 16 Candles
16
thing.
Candles
where, like,
especially.
There's so much in that movie with the character of Long Duk Dong and like, where
which first off,
have,
just the name alone is
Long
fucking
Duk
terrible,
Dong.
Right? And and John Hughes tried to justify it, saying that like, but it's an Asian character, and like, you know, he's meant to like poke, like, and it's just it wasn't good.
Hold on, he could say that, but every time they say his name, they did a psh, like
yeah.
Oh, they right. did they, do
you
the gong.
Yeah, so you could say I didn't intend for that. Really? There's a sound effect every time you say his name.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
And then, but you can get into, you know, weird, I mean, even with Weird Science, there's some misogyny there. Like, they create this, like, big boob.
What
like,
do you two maniacs want to get into now?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that was a lesser of them. But Breakfast Club and 16 Candles were probably the biggest ones.
Yeah.
Never mind, like, the creating a buxom lady out of nothing so you can have sex with her, which is creepy. But then the lesson of it is that that you have to basically, like, be so cool that you don't give a shit about other people, and then other people won't want to be around you. Like, that's what it kind of portrays through that movie. Is like, if you treat the women like dirt that you're interested in and find interest in other women, then they'll come flocking to you. And they did. They fucking did in that movie. It's a terrible fucking lesson.
And then it got a TV series on USA.
Yeah.
I
never watched
that.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
This is the same rehash that we see time and time again, where like, oh my God, he's a dictator. She's smart, but they're at odds. He grabs her in just the right way, and they kiss, and it's going
to
happen.
Well, it goes to,
like,
what
the fuck is...
One of the movies that came to my mind that aged terribly was The Towering Inferno. And it was the precursor to the blockbuster, the typical Hollywood blockbuster, right? So I give it that. So it had its place in cinema history. But if you watch the movie, it's just like constant, like, grabbing the woman, like, last time I'll see you kiss, and then, like over and over again, this heroism thing of, like, she's helpless, and he's, but this came out, what was it, 60, what year did that movie come out, 68?
I think something it was like that, the yeah. 70s.
Was it the 70s, 72, 73?
Early 70s.
But, like, it was utter shit. If you go back and watch that now, it's utter shit.
Came out terrible. In 1974.
74. It's crap.
It was close.
Yeah.
Now, as Murphy was speaking to the like, they're at odds with each other, that's like every Katherine Heigl movie.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
There's like 27 Dresses where she meets like the reporter that's reporting on all the bridesmaids she's been in. And then he's a dick and he doesn't believe in love. And she like believes in love, but she's got all his dresses. And then they get drunk. Up. And they
I've
do karaoke.
I've got to trust you on that because I've never watched
I watch
movies.
It with an ex. And
then there's knocked up.
And then he learns a valuable lesson about love. That it can exist and that he needs to like open his heart to it. And she learns that to accept him for being a fucking douchebag that is like hiding shit from her.
I feel like you've been holding this in for years and years to rant about these fucking movies that you couldn't at the time.
And then there's The Blunt Truth with Katherine Heigl and fucking Gerard Butler. And he's this like... this fucking like hard copy type
get it out man.
Dennis Miller type fucking dude where he's all like, yeah, and women fucking suck and this is why they suck, bah, I'm Gerard Butler, and he's just yelling at this camera, and he then gets
get it out, come on, come on, he gets, this has turned into a therapy session.
Did he have a KY jelly wrestling match with him? Like in that movie,
there's something like that.
Yeah.
It's like The Man Show meets Dennis Miller, but now.
Oh, The Man Show! What a pile of shit.
And
sorry.
So he ends up being taken on by this studio, and like picked up for major like circulation. And Katherine Heigl's character has to like work with him as a producer, and she's like, "He's such a chauvinist pig," and he's like, "You're such a feminist," and they're butting heads like crazy, and then they end up in a hot air balloon on like. Location or something.
What?
And they're stuck with each other, and then they like fall in love.
Can we make a new podcast where you just describe rom-coms? Because could be entertaining.
I think there's already one. It's like the Rom-Com Bros or something like that, where they do exactly that. I don't want to step on their toes because it's actually a good show.
Did you say all this right after you watched it, or did you go, yeah, it was all right? Or did you get into hardcore, I hate this shit so much?
I think I bit my tongue with 27 Dresses. With The Blunt Truth, I think I went on a rant after that. I was like,
shit.
This is dog shit. This is so bad. And not even like it's a bad movie. Like, this makes me angry as a human being that I have to share a species with these people. This is fucking terrible.
But are you mad at the actor and the actress, or are you mad at the fucking screenwriter?
Everybody,
everyone.
It's a team effort.
So
the
I'm Russia
the
in World War
II.
I'm scorching the earth when it comes to the blunt truth.
The like,
luckily, fuck that movie. I don't have the experience too many rom-coms.
Yeah, but I will say, all right. So I'm gonna do a hard turn off that, so Hobbit can calm down a little bit and just you want some
and
water.
Then there,
no, you're done.
Let me talk about Sandra Bullock.
All right, it's very rare that Hobbit redlines. He just redlined. That's how angry he is.
Fair to fucking launch. Same fucking thing. Every fucking.
Nope. All right. So one thing we haven't got into is movies that have aged poorly. We've talked about a lot of social issues. We pretty much hit most social issues with why movies have aged poorly, because poor decisions made during the writing process, right? Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about why movies have aged poorly because of effects. Like a movie that went so hard on effects. Like the earliest one that comes to me is The Birds. Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds looks like ass now. Go back and try to watch that movie and actually take it suspensefully. They look like shit. Utter shit.
Like not as bad as Birdemic, but not much better.
Birdemic is so bad that that's what actually makes it wonderfully watchable.
You know what looks better than that? I Am Legend looks better than The Birds now.
Wow.
Yeah.
But The Birds came out in 1963.
No, I understand it, but it's still dated.
Yeah,
Hitchcock used early special effects that were early remnants, or the beginnings of generated.
No, remnants is exactly what's in that film. You can see little pieces of like. stuff in the background as there's like silhouettes of birds against fucking like sheets hanging and stuff.
Oh, dude, it's terrible. So bad.
It is interesting you brought up I Am Legend, where honestly the terrible, terrible CGI kills a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you had practical effects, I mean, because it had potential. I remember enjoying it until you see that first CGI and you're like,
if they
look
like
this.
The monsters from The Descent,
thank
done.
You. thing.
No, you know what they look like? Fucking, I don't know, weird, see-through.
You don't have to do a Mega Man where he's driving around in a convertible fucking popping zombies.
They look like the dude in the I Come to Daddy video from Aphex Twin.
Yes.
Like, just a bunch of those being like, I will eat your soul, and yelling as they're chasing fucking Will Smith around in his
dog. I wish they had said that.
All right.
I kind of wish that we were doing video for this just to get Murphy's reactions to some of these.
Just to film you points. With your angry rom-com rants.
Hey, that fucking dress.
I'm trying to get boomerangs and shit. So,
there was 27 of them, goddammit.
There's some good romantic comedies. No,
we're not going off on this tangent yet.
We're not
yet.
Going back.
Not yet. We're not on nights yet. You wait for this tangent. I think and you and I will go head to head. It'll be fine.
Oh, Jesus.
Honestly, one of the things that I recently, I was trying to watch the Star Wars trilogy, the original trilogy, and the
pre-turd or
the CGI updates.
Fuck those movies so hard.
The CGI updates fucked
so bad.
Fucking bad. And I think that it's important to mention that because the original, like the puppets and the figures that they used were fine. They were fine.
Yeah.
Do you hear me, George Lucas? They were fine.
There was nothing wrong with the desert being barren while they're looking for things.
There was nothing wrong with the Sarlacc without a beak.
You don't need to add random fucking creatures.
You don't get that enjoyable Jabba the Hutt like area like without a good song and dance.
You shut your whore mouth. Before you shut your whore mouth.
Look, you gotta have silly
stuff. We had Psy Snoodles and the modal nodes, you whore.
I'm just saying, you have to have the silly before you send a chick to get eaten by a rancor.
Is Lucasfilm sending you a chick? Are you sucking on that Lucas cock?
I'm just saying the pod racing in episode one's kind of awesome, you know?
No, it was never awesome. Everyone that said it was awesome was trying to find a reason to like that fucking shit movie.
Are you sucking on Lucas's dick nipple?
God, why can't that be the name of the episode? Lucas's dick nipple. Son of a bitch.
I do remember watching...
we're spinning gold here. We really are. Yeah.
I remember watching New Hope in the theater when they first reissued it. And they're like, new shit. And you get to that Jabba scene. And just it was a packed house of like 800 plus people. And as soon as Jabba showed up, what Lucas was attention was, oh, wow, it's Jabba the Hutt. And what you got was 800 people fucking groaning at how fucking
because
stupid
it was
that
horrible.
Looked.
Yeah,
but there's unnecessary.
Movies, there's movies that just started out with bad CGI. I mean, big one for me is Lawnmower Man. That fucking is terrible.
Yeah,
fair.
That's Virtuosity.
Denzel and who was it?
Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Terrible.
Or the 13th Floor. Do you remember that fucking movie?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Ooh. What about in Mystery Men when Casanova Frankenstein dissolves?
Oh
yeah.
Oh, we just saw the thing about it. Fucking the reboot of Lost in Space in the '90s.
Oh yeah, some of the
with Joey
characters in that
and Friends.
Oh
yeah,
real bad. Yeah,
yeah, looked like utter ass.
Ugh.
Oh, it's terrible, man. Like CGI definitely. Oh, the Mummy with the Scorpion King.
Well, the thing is, all these movies that we're mentioning come within a few years of each other. It's when CGI was in that uncanny valley where it had gotten good enough that it got utilized a lot more, but it wasn't good enough to trick you into not knowing whether it was real or not.
I think it made people lazy, honestly.
It got good enough to where people could make it for video games. Does not mean it translates to putting it in a fucking movie.
Well, that's when and why Marvel was so successful using CGI is that they used a mix of practical and CGI, and that's really the industry standard now.
It's still the actor.
Favreau said on the set of Iron Man that he was super anti-CGI. He was trying to avoid it at all costs during the making of Iron Man. And studio was like, no, we have to use some CGI. That's just how things are done now. And he was like poo-pooing it. And he was like saying, this doesn't look real. This doesn't look real whenever a CGI thing came across trying to push stuff to practical. And then finally he's like, this whole sequence, you can tell that this is CGI. And a dude was like, dude, that's practical. And he had to like sit back and be like, okay, yeah, if I'm not even able to tell the difference.
There you go.
Then and he started looking at it objectively, and it was still some stuff like, no, that doesn't look good enough. But he was accepting that this is part of the process, and
he went to objectively instead of passionately.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So,
we are at the end of this episode. So
there's so much more we can cover.
So much,
so much
there's
more.
So much more.
Can I feel like there's one important thing that we got to touch on.
Okay,
and it's the weird dichotomy that is Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yes, we haven't even touched on Blazing Saddles.
Because it sits in this strange nexus point where I can't imagine remaking that movie. I can't imagine it being made at any other time but partially because of Cleavon Little just coming in and being such an amazing, stunning badass and obviously being the high point of the film, I think that's part of what saves it. And the fact that we're like, all of the language in it is used to ridicule the racists.
The racists are, the people that are not racist, like Gene Wilder's character, they have this kind of wink to each other. It's like, look at these idiots.
Right.
They're clearly smarter than any of the racists that are
there. Exactly.
Right.
They know how the world actually works, and the racists are just like, watch me fuck with them. And then it turns into some fucking Bugs Bunny shit.
Right. Yeah. And then they're fucking with the racists. For help.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. There, it does sit in its own nexus,
mm-hmm.
so to say. But that nexus is named Mel Brooks Films, and it has its time and place,
mm-hmm.
and
okay.
it does not need to be remade.
But no, 100%.
Zero. Like, Mel Brooks Films are Mel Brooks Films, and everyone who appreciates Mel Brooks understands that even the actors hint at the fact they're fucking being ridiculous and they're making fun of all the shit that's wrong in the world, as the comedy was of that time period.
Mm-hmm.
As Blazing Saddles, History of the World, The Producers, you know, Spaceballs, like...
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of them, that kind of, there's this school of filmmakers that you're able to do more ridiculous than any other filmmakers because you just wire walk it just the right way where you are being offensive.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're saying stuff that's not PC, but you do it in this tongue-in-cheek way, like South Park. The South Park guys do that shit.
Simpsons used
like
to.
Like, for 20 fucking years.
It's like a challenge now. Like, what are they going to do next?
Yeah, and they do stuff where it's like, how did you pull that off? Like, you should have everyone mad at you for this episode, and everybody's like, yay, that was a fun one. You know,
I will say,
same with Mel Brooks for the most part. Like, there are a couple things here and there that are a little bit
fair.
They're a little bit dated.
Yeah.
And I will say that it is on the money to bring South Park up as an example, but it is different when you do animated versus live action, too. People do respond differently to cartoons than they do to live action.
What about marionettes?
Mm. Do you have a specific example?
Team America World Police.
Yeah, that's very offensive. That's
Durga Muhammad Jihad is repeated so many times in that fucking movie.
He pays a point couple taken. Beard on there.
Yeah,
says that shit.
Yeah.
You have a puppet shitting on that puppet, right?
Like, there are certain films that once you decide to commit, you know what the fuck is about to happen.
Yeah.
And I am not for or against or anything, but good fucking God, did you watch the trailer?
Right? Like, no shit.
It's films like Team America and to a lesser extent Tropic Thunder, where you're just like, all right, so here's what we're in for.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's another thing, like Tropic Thunder, we haven't really glanced on much, but it's an easy comment, is that in our conversation about blackface, yes, there is, Robert Downey Jr. is in blackface in that movie. But the commentary that's being said while he's in blackface is that, what made you think this is okay?
Mm-hmm.
To the character in that movie, they're making fun of the fact of like how far some actors will
this
go.
This Australian actor will go to play
where
a role.
He thinks he can relate to the African-American actor that's on the set with them.
It's making fun of that entire whitewashing like thing in that movie. So it's actually, it's able to do it without, by being critical of it.
Line case in point where he says, what do you mean, you people? And then the actual black person goes, what do you mean, you people?
Oh, so perfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then how he goes from being, you know, the pigmented Australian guy to look black to being an Asian guy.
Oh my God.
And the end of the movie.
Stripping away the
and
layers
you can hear in his, when he's speaking in, forget what dialect he's is speaking in, but you can hear the different levels of him doing it as like the Australian doing the black voice, doing the accent. And you hear every part of those levels in his interpretation. I'm like, that's fucking amazing acting to be able to layer it like that.
Robert Downey Jr., man.
That year for him. Iron Man and that.
Yeah.
Was huge.
Well, and The Soloist was a year before that.
That was the year
after Jamie Foxx. The Soloist was the year after Iron Man?
The beginning of the summer, May, like Iron Man came out. End of the summer is Tropic Thunder. So like he just fucking knocked. That was
there. There were some parts where he came off as like straight up, no, I'm a white dude acting black. Like when he's talking about some fried chicken, some collard greens.
No, that was pushed hard because that's when the actual black actor was like, okay, I'm about to fuck you up.
Yeah.
Like,
did you just quote the Jeffersons?
Yeah,
moving on up.
Moving on up.
Oh
God, damn.
All right, that's it for this episode of Geeks Under the Influence. Thank you so much for bearing with us during this episode. I had a lot of fun, though. This was
it was a rough one. I'm sorry for your listeners, probably, but we had fun.
Yeah.
we had a blast.
it is sometimes nice to kind of challenge the format a little bit by doing something a little bit more open world in our conversation, where it's not as structured as like a series of movies or a franchise of some type or another, or a some type of fandom. This is talking about all of them in a very kind of like vague terms about what's okay, what's not okay. And ultimately that does come up to the viewer on what they think is or is not okay. But ultimately these movies are, you've got to look at it from the same perspective that we try to here at the network, is that we are colorful. We say stuff that's like a little bit iffy sometimes, but for the most part, what we do try to portray is inclusion, that everybody is accepted equally on all ends, whether it be your level of nerddom, doesn't matter where you come from, your background, who you are, like, or identify as, does not fucking matter here. What matters is that you're able to make dick jokes with the rest of us and
talk about the nipples of the dick.
Nipples of the dick. And no, it's really just that we get along. That's ultimately what it comes down to. And I think the movies that are able to get away with this, like, pseudo not PC or very not PC stuff, are the ones where it does come as tongue in cheek and it's not trying to be punching down. It's not trying to be mean. It's just trying to be funny. And sometimes that comes off as a little bit more colorful than you intended. And that's unfortunate. But ultimately, the intention, I think, is what's important in a lot of these movies. So that's my two cents. That's my end of the talk show.
Was that your Andy Rooney? Like, let me tell you about.
That's my Andy Rooney minute. Yeah.
Get off your soapbox, Hobbit.
We're done. Thank you so much for listening. Follow us on GYPodcast.com. Subscribe and rate us anywhere that you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, which is blowing up right now.
Spotify.
Change all their stuff. Spotify has been doing really well for us. We appreciate everybody that's been following us on Spotify. We've been getting a whole new audience just by being on Spotify. We're going to be trying to get on Pandora is starting to accept podcasts now. Ooh, as well. So we're going to be getting on there soon as well. So check us out wherever you get your shows, and we'll see you next time on another episode of Geeks Under the Influence. I'm Mike the Hobbit, and as always, join us or die.
Shut the fuck up, Hobbit.
Join us or die. Join us or die, or I will swallow your soul. Necronomicon gives us power to rise from the dead. You play to take, our flame begins to spread. You can fight all you want, cause you don't to resist. We're here to take the world and rule with an iron fist. So join us or die.
GUIPodcast.com